sit down. Move this up a little. You didn't mention, where is he? He didn't mention Yehuda, you know, who takes care of Dafna. Somebody has to be mention Yehuda. He's forgotten. Anyway, good evening, everybody. What I have to say, first of all, is that I give the Hanhala of the yeshiva a great deal of credit. Not that every yeshiva would have the guts to invite me to speak before Yom HaTzmaut. There are a few, you can count them on one hand, and they've all invited me. And I try and make it my business to speak to young, eager students of Torah about this whole period of the year, extremely important things that you have to hear, and it's best that you hear it now. There's a story that has haunted me for years, and it haunts me even more now than it ever did before. The story happened on the morning of Chof Chet Iyar 1967, the 28th day of Iyar 1967. During the course of the night, Israeli paratroopers were preparing for the assault on the old city of Yerushalayim. I have this feeling that as that morning dawned, and it was a beautiful, beautiful early summer morning in Yerushalayim, that the angels in heaven were jumping with excitement because they already knew what was going to take place. It was going to be the day on which HaKadosh Baruch Hu, after 2,000 years, was going to return Yerushalayim to Klal Yisrael, and a city that had been fought over for 86 times, 86 battles had been fought for Yerushalayim, more than any other city on the face of this entire earth. And here it was, in the next few hours, it was going to fall into the hands of Klal Yisrael, and Yerushalayim returns to us. Now, it had been 19 years since the establishment of the state in 1948. Israeli paratroopers are young people. They're 19, 20-year-olds. None of them had ever been at the Kotel during the course of those 19 years. You couldn't go to the Kotel, even though it was part of the armistice agreement with Jordan, but they never keep their promises anyway, which is extremely important for us to remember at all times, at all times. Anyway, they'd never been at the Kotel. Anyway, it's also important for you to know, unfortunately, we take things for granted. Don't ever take anything for granted. But maybe we'll talk more about that later. Anyway, here are these Israeli soldiers. They've broken into the city, and they're running through the small streets and the alleyways, the entire area that is now the open plaza in front of the Kotel, was then all houses and streets. It was all bulldozed after the Six-Day War. And here they're running through this maze of alleyways, and they don't know how to get to the Kotel. They've never been there. And a group of paratroopers are rushing through the street, and they see in an alleyway, there's a man standing there, and he's trembling, he's frightened. And they go over to him, they assure him that they're not going to hurt him. All that they want is, how do we get to the wall? How do we get to the Kotel? He's frightened, he's terrified, but he shows them the way to the wall. And he stands there as he watches Israeli soldiers make their way up to the Temple Mount. He sees the Israeli flag going up over the mountain. The greatest moment in 2,000 years of Jewish history. Who was this fellow that was standing and watching it? His name was Mahmud Daoud Schleifer, a New York-born Jew, Mark David Schleifer, who had converted to Islam and married a Jordanian girl, was working for a Jordanian newspaper in the old city of Jerusalem. The story is told by Abraham Rabinovich, who was a long-time reporter for the Jerusalem Post, And he wrote a book, a fascinating book, The Battle for Jerusalem, those 24 hours of battle. He ends this incident by saying, "What a strange witness to one of the greatest moments in Jewish history." Mark David Schleifer, who at his bris most probably was called Mordechai David Schleifer, is standing there and he's watching this greatest moment in Jewish history. He doesn't have a clue what's happening. He doesn't understand. He doesn't know what he's seeing. He's a witness, but he's out of it. He doesn't have a clue. What a tragedy to have the schus to be there to watch it, and not only be there to watch it. The one who was able to send Israeli soldiers to the mountain, guide the way for them. And he's standing there, he doesn't have a clue. That's a frightening, frightening tragedy. Why does the story haunt me? The story haunts me because you don't have to be a Mahmoud Daoud Schleifer, a New York-born Jew who converted to Islam, not to see, perceive, understand, and internalize Jewish history. You can be a Shomer Torah Mitzvahs, you can be a Yeshiva Bacha, you can be a terrific Jew and just plain be out of it. Ah, Medina, stay. Ah, needed to stay. Ah. Yom HaTzmaut, yes. How are Yom HaTzmaut? What are you talking about? It's awesome. You can't do that. There are a lot of people walking around who haven't converted to Islam, and they're certified, bona fide Mark David Schleifers. The purpose of what I'm going to say tonight is that none of you should ever be a Mark David Schleifer. You got to be tuned in not only to Jewish history, you have to be tuned in to current events. If Klal Yisrael is in pain, you should know it's a time for you to be in pain. No Jew is an island unto himself. You're part of the greatest people on the face of this earth. You have to be tuned in. You have to know what's going on. We're in a period of pain now. You should know it. You should feel it. You should say it to people, tell them with kavana about it. You have to know something else. Jewish history, with all of its pain and with all of its agony, is being written right here. Make no mistake, there may be Jewish communities in the world that look like they're strong and they're powerful and they have loads of money and they're building yeshivas and day schools and mikvahs and kosher pizza places, and therefore you get the feeling this is a thriving Jewish community. I got up this morning in a shtickle cold sweat. What was I thinking about? We know the history of Bayit Sheni, Ezra, Nehemiah, 42,000 people are the only ones who make the great Aliyah to Eretz Yisrael together with Ezra and Nehemiah, there's about 500-600 years, and I started thinking to myself, most probably the largest Jewish community at the time was Bavel. What happened in Bavel to that large Jewish community during all of those 500-600 years? I can't name one rabbi, one rashiva. I can't name one yeshiva in Bavel. 600 years. What happened there? And then I found a history book that just says, well, those communities outside of Eretz Yisrael lived on the fringes of Jewish history. Oh, I love that sentence. The fringes of Jewish history. There are great Jewish communities today in the world that will be footnotes to Jewish history. Jewish history, with all of its pain and with all of its agony, is being written right here. If you're zeicher to see it, learn it, know about it, then you're not a Mark David Schleifer. But if, you know, to me it happens all the time. You know, people start out with me. I don't know, they like starting out with me. Usually we wipe the floor with them, and they never start up again, And the ones that sort of come to me and think they're going to start up with me are certified Mark David Schleifers. A Rosh Kollel came to talk to me on Shabbos in Hanau. Medina, stage, mate, what? What do you want? Will you tell me first of all, what do you want? We should invite the British? They should be the ones who should be in charge here? Do you want Arafat, Yimach Shemay, to be in charge? And by the way, you don't realize that the establishment of the state was the hand of God? This was Maisa Hashem? This was a Matnas HaKadosh Baruch Hu? You can say about the 6 million that it was Ritzon Hashem, but the establishment of the state of Israel is not. You're mad. You're out of your mind. If he would have known, and if he would have understood, I would have told him, you know what you are? You're an MDS. You're a Mark David Schleifer. You're hopeless. I think it's going to get exciting. I want to give you the essential principles that will make absolutely certain that you will never fall into the trap of being one of those. By the time I'm finished, I think we will be able to say with absolute certainty that you're not going to be Mark David Schleifer. I see the key to understanding the period of history in which we live. And it's terribly important to know history. It's so important. You know, I'll tell you, there's a difference between me and you. There's a big difference. I'm going to be talking about things that I lived through. And for you, it's history. The day of the establishment of the State of Israel, the Six-Day War, Entebbe, you weren't even born by Entebbe. All of this is like, it's the same thing like the Roman era to you. You have to learn, you have to know, you have to sense it, you have to feel it in your bones. You're part of Klal Yisrael, and this is modern Jewish history that's so important. So number one, the halachic basis of how we are to view this period in history. It's a Gemara in Sanhedrin. This is pillar number one. It's a Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Tzadik Ches Amid Aleph. Omar Rabbi Abba. Rabbi Abba said, Ein lecho keitz migula mizu. There is no greater end of days or proof that the end of days is coming, that we're moving into a period of geula. We're not saying how long it will take. But the Gemara says there's a clear proof. If you want to know, if you want to know, are we in a period of Geula? So the Gemara says, Omer Rab Abba, Ein Lecho Keitz Megula Mizeh, and all that Rab Abba does is he quotes a pasuk in Yecheskel. My students and members of my shul know this pasuk Baal Peh. And if I catch them not knowing it, they lose their membership. They're finished. The Gemara says the following. Pasuk in Yecheskel says, Va'atem Hore Yisrael, you mountains of Israel, Ampechem Titenu, give out your branches, Ufer Yechem Tisu, and carry your fruit, La'ami Yisrael, for my people Israel, Ki Kervu Lavo, for the time that of their return is coming close. The land promised to remain absolutely faithful to the Jewish people, Eretz Yisrael never provided for any population for 1900 years. Didn't sustain a population. When is Eretz Yisrael going to begin to give out produce? When the land knows that Eretz Yisrael, that Jews are on the way back. I think it was in 1887. That's when Mark Twain visited Eretz Yisrael, and he wrote a description. I always tell people, if you're going to read Mark Twain's description of Eretz Yisrael, make sure you have a big bottle of Mei Eden cold right beside you. Because as you read his description of Eretz Yisrael, you're going to get so thirsty you won't know what hit you. He describes Palestine: dry, arid, warm, dead, nothing grows. It's all dust. I tell you, I'm already, you feel like you're in the middle of a desert. If that fellow Mark Twain would have come back 50, 60 years later, he wouldn't know what hit him. He'd see fruits and vegetables and flowers growing in Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael has only responded in 1900 years to the ministering hands of Klal Yisrael. In the middle of the Tochach and Parshat of Chukosai, there's a pasuk that says, "V'shamamu olecha oyevechem hayoshim ba." All the terrible curses that are supposed to come down about Klal Yisrael, and in the middle, Rashi says it, Ramban says it, Toras Kahanan says it. In the middle of the Tochach, there's good news. You know what the good news is? "V'shamamu olecha oyevechem hayoshim ba." Your enemy who will live in the land will be desolate. Rashi says the land will never provide for the non-Jews going to live here. No people were ever able to take root over here because the land simply will not respond to non-Jewish hands. Jews started coming here, and all of a sudden, anybody know what Shuk Machne Yehuda is? I tell you, I once said every terrorist in the Middle East knows what Shuk Machne Yehuda is. And all these yeshiva bachim don't know what Shuk Machne Yehuda is. You'll never make terrorists. Never. Shuk Machne Yehuda is the big fruit and vegetable market in Yerushalayim. Did you know the answer, but you were afraid to answer it? You're afraid of me? All right, tell me, what's Shuk Machne Yehuda?
By the
Tachanan.
Not by the Tachanan. Down the block,
or off the block from the Tachana. In other words, which Tachana? Tachana, Merkazit. In other words, if you go from Tachana, Merkazit, in the direction of Shar Yafo, so there's Shuk Machne Yehuda. Now you guys, when I ask a question, I have to hear a response. Otherwise, I thought that you don't know what Shuk Machne Yehuda is. I once said, and someday you'll understand what I said, that if you want to talk to God, you go to the Kotel. If you want to see Him, you go to Shuk Machne Yehuda. Ein l'cho keitz megula mizu. There is no greater revealed end of days than this. If you see Eretz Yisrael giving out fruits and vegetables like that, it's because the land knows that Jews are coming home. Can you imagine what it means now that we export food to other parts of the world? I'll tell you, I knew in advance of the rest of the world that the communist empire was going to fall. I went to Russia in December of 1983. Now I have to tell you a little history. Now, today, of course, every kid, if he's 15 years old, he's been in Kiev 5 times. He's been in the Ukraine, he's been in Tashkent, he's been in Tbilisi, you understand? He schleps all around. When I went, it was dangerous to go. I was a big hero, you understand? I went when it was dangerous to go. And make no mistake, at the airport as I came in, the KGB took me into one of those classic rooms with one bulb hanging from the ceiling. And boy, did they work me over. Did I survive that? I'll survive anything. It was dangerous to go. We were there for 2 weeks. We met with the greatest people I've met in so many years. It's unbelievable. We left, I was there with Rabbi Galinsky of Shalavim, and 2 weeks later I couldn't wait to get out of that accursed country, and all the food, kosher food, whatever we had left, we left in Moscow, and we get onto this air flood plane to freedom, the flight to freedom, and we're hungry. You understand? We're hungry. There's nothing we can eat. They didn't give OU meals on air flight. You understand? You couldn't get a kosher meal. I would have asked for a kosher meal, I would have been shot at dawn. Anyway, they start the serving, and we see that they have fruit for dessert. Oh, fruit! They come around, and they offer us apples. I took a look at that apple. You understand? Emaciated, dry, small, signs of rot on it. And I said to myself, the smallest country in the world is producing unbelievable, beautiful apples. You get McIntosh, you can get Granny Smith with a Hebrew accent, you can get any kind of apple you want in the world. And the great superpower that has H-bombs can't grow a Verschlungene apple. So you know what that means? This empire is going to collapse. And I was right. One night I went with my wife, went shopping, we're coming home someplace, we needed some fruits and vegetables, some things. I went to a place, Birkat Rachel. It used to be outside of Hanover, Birkat Rachel. And we're in the fruit and vegetable section. And one of the hotshot frummies, an American fellow, Shtik Rosh Hashiva also. He's also there. I mean, I only know him by sight. I don't really know the fellow, but he comes over to me, and this was completely unprovoked attack. He says to me, it was one of the difficult days in Eretz Yisrael. We have, unfortunately, many of them. So he says, Rabbi Gold, you still think this is Geula? So I told him, you should be ashamed of yourself. In front of the tomatoes and the cucumbers, you say something like that? They bear witness that we're in a process of Geula. They tell me that they're still trying to scrape him off the floor of Birchat Rachel, you understand? We wiped out this guy. Doesn't understand. If Chazal say Ein Lecha Keitz Megula Nizubar, I'll tell you even more than that. You should know that Anshei Knesset HaGedola made that part of the Shemona Esrei that every Jew says three times a day, and I'd say 99% of the people that daven the Kavana don't have a clue what they're saying. Don't have a clue. They don't understand that Shemona Esrei is a Yesoda HaShtofa. The Gemara in Megillah, you can check me out, Daf Yud Zayin Amid Beis, the Gemara in Megillah says, I believe the seventh bracha, or eighth bracha in Shemona Esrei, is Borech Oleinu, Hashem Elokeinu, as Hashona Hazos, Letovah V'Vilvracha. That's the bracha where we ask the Rebbeinu Shem to bless the earth, the same bracha, the same Talu Mato L'Vracha, Al Tenei Adama, Eretz Yisrael, it should give out fruit. And that's the only time in Shas, for a second time, where the Gemara brings in the name of the Anshei Knesset HaGedola, why is that bracha there? Because, you guessed it, Atem Hori Yisrael, Yecheskel, Atem Hori Yisrael, mountains of Israel, Antochem Titeinu, Ufer Yechem Tisu, L'am Yisrael, Kikor, Kerv Ulavo. Because the bracha of Borech Aleinu, which bracha does it precede? What's the next bracha? Pekah, Peshofar, Gadol, Lechenu Seinu, V'soneis, V'kabetz Kol Yoseinu, V'kabzeinu Yachad Me'eira, Me'arba Kantos Oretz, Birchas Hashanim, the Kates Hamigula, and Eretz Yisrael that provides and sustains Klal Yisrael. That must precede what's going to come next, and what comes next is Kibbutz Golios. And every Shemona Esrei, you say it every Shemona Esrei, you may not be aware of it, but boy, you're going to be aware of it from now on. Do you know where I'm up to? I'll tell you where I'm up to. The bracha that I say with great kavana now is Hashiva Shofteinu Kvarishona V'yoatzeinu Kvabchima. We need leadership. Oida, we need leadership. That's what we need right now. So we're coming now to the second pillar. If the first pillar with which to understand the Hashkafa of our time is the Keitz HaMegula, I believe it was Ralph Cook who said that anybody who attempts to understand our period in history, and he said it 60 years ago, and does not begin with the Kates Hamagullah, will never be able to achieve any truth or any understanding of what's going on. And anybody who can make this these sick, sick jokes about Yom HaTzomus, Hallel, Shmallel, and all the rest, doesn't begin to understand the Yesod of Hashkafa that is said three times a day in every Shmon Esrei. Doesn't have a clue. He can say it, but Kavanah, he doesn't know what he's talking about. The second is Kibbutz Golios, the ingathering of the exiles. Are you aware, my dear friends, that what has taken place in the last 56 years in this country is unprecedented, unmatched, and unparalleled in the history of any nation on the face of this earth? A return of a people to their ancestral home after an absence of close to 2,000 years? Unmatched, unparalleled, it never happened to any other people. But it happened to us. Why did it happen to us? Because Torah, Nevi'im, and Ksuvim talked about it time and time again. The Shabbat Hashem Elokecha Shvut Chavri Chamecha V'Kshav V'Kibetzcha Mikol Ha'amim Asher Hashitzcha Hashem Elokecha Shama Im Yeni Dachacha V'Ktzeh Hashemayim Misham Yikabetzcha Misham Yikvachecha. He will gather you in from all four corners of the earth. You know how many hundreds of Ksuvim there are in Tanakh that talk about Kibbutz Golios? And do you know what we are? We here now are the living witness that every one of those psukim is true. I have very little patience with people. You know, I'm usually a very patient fellow. Don't I sound like one? Yeah, I'm very patient. But here I was a nice fellow, so I didn't go. I wasn't too rough with him. When people start coming to me with the codes. You know, if you take 15 letters in succession, every 15 letters you'll find all sorts of messages in Torah, and this is proof that Torah is true. So a guy came over to me over Yom Tov and starts telling me about this. He said to him, do me a favor, don't talk to me about codes. For that matter, I'm not even interested in certain yeshivas where they teach you proofs of the existence of God. They teach you all sorts of proofs of Torah Mi-Sinai. I don't need proofs anymore. We're the living proof. There are hundreds of psukim in Tanakh that we are the living fulfillment of it. Of course Torah is true. We're the proof. 2,500 years ago, Yeshayahu, Yirmiyahu, Yechezkel, Hosea, all of them talk about Kibbutz Golios. Did it happen to any other people? That would happen to us in our day. We're the living proof. That Moshe Emes v'Todos Emes, I don't need any cold schmoes. Just open your eyes. If your eyes are open, and if you can see, and you're not a Mark David Schleifer, you can just take a look around you and see that what's going on. We're the living proof, the Torah's Emes. There's no doubt. There was a period of time, this is between me and you, there was a period of time that somehow or other I made a collection of tapes of the speeches that I'd given in some of the girls' schools and some of the yeshivas before Yom HaTzmolot. Now there's one general theme. I'm not talking about Lev HaTorah, but other places. The general theme is they take these 17, 18-year-old girls who've come starry-eyed for a year to Eretz Yisrael, and these yeshiva bachim, nice kids, and they tell them the yesod that they have to tell them why we don't celebrate Yom HaTzmolot. Why we don't stand when the siren goes off. Oh, there are so many. I had a collection of these tapes. There's a general theme. The general theme is the following. And I remember I had one tape in the house. The guy was screaming, worse than me, much worse than me. The guy was screaming, my tape recorder was jumping back and forth. And he was yelling, it's so terrible here. It's so terrible here. For this we're going to say, Hallel. And every year you can always find something that's terrible here. If you can't find something that's terrible, you can always rely on Chil Shabbos. You can always yell about Chil Shabbos. as though the fact that somebody is Mechalel Shabbos, therefore I don't have to thank the Rebbeinu Shem for the great gift that he's given Klal Yisrael in 2,000 years, and we're the beneficiaries of it. These guys are experts. They're experts, Pashit, in taking young, innocent yeshiva bachim and girls in the girls' schools and turning them into Mark David Schleifers. It's unbelievable. There's a whole economy, factories that are turning them out. And you can't get up and say, Rebbeinu Shel Olam, we're living in unusual and exceptional times. The fulfillment of Divrei HaNeviim. We can see the Rebbeinu Shel Olam every step we take in this country. Can't do it. I don't know why. I don't know why. I don't know why. I can't understand. Any little thing that may happen is a place the yeshiva gets a donation of $10,000. That's a mess. Wait, it's not a mess. Everything's a mess. Except our entire existence over here. Do you understand? We're the smallest people on the face of this earth, and we're mamish a bone in the throat of the whole world. It's unbelievable. This is not Yad Hashem. Did Yad Hashem, I'm a peace-loving person, and I'm sitting at a wedding 2 nights ago, and I have to hear it again. Wherever I go, I have to hear the same thing all over again. And even from frumer people, you know, we have to get out of Gaza, we have to get out of here, we have to give this up. Why? The demographic problem. Have you heard about the demographic problem? We're soon going to be run over by all these Arabs. There's a terrible demographic problem. So I tell you, anybody who says this doesn't have a clue what Klal Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael is all about. This morning I started writing an imaginary conversation. By the time I'm finished with it, I'll believe it. And most probably the conversation did take place. It's early May 1948. And I don't know, a whole bunch of fellows are sitting around the table someplace in Tel Aviv. I don't know, there's a Yitzchak, a Yosef, a Chaim, a Yankel, Yigal, Gad, Omri, Achav, and David. And they're talking about, well, what are we going to do? So one of them says that you should know from a military point of view, we can't establish a state. We're going to be invaded. We don't have enough ammunition for more than a week's worth of fighting. The next one says, listen, if we're going to have to establish a state, and in establishing this state, we're going to be invaded by 7 nations. The economy here is going to be torn apart. We're not going to be able to survive it. Right? And then, of course, there's the smart guy who says, we can't establish a state unless the President of the United States approves it. Who is the President of the United States then? I feel great. It's not that you don't know the history of modern Israel. You guys don't know history. You don't know American history. Who was the President of the United States in 1948? Make me feel better. Somebody tell me the truth. Truman. Because you grew up in somebody's house. That's why you know. Harry Truman. So some smart guy sitting around the table over there in Tel Aviv says, we can't establish a state unless Truman is going to approve it. We need Truman's approval. You know, by the time the conversation is coming to an end, there has to be somebody, of course, who's going to say, the demographic problem. There are 100 million Arabs, and we're 550,000, 600,000 Jews. How will we be able to solve them? They're going to walk all over us. So I have to say, thank God there was a Jew. Most people don't like him, but he had vision. He's the David who's sitting at the table. in order to establish the state of Israel, you know what you had to do? You had to take a great leap of faith. And you understand, 56 years later, everybody's still going crazy about the demographic problem. By the way, from Torah, you should know that there's no solution to the demographic problem. And not only do you know from Torah that there's no solution to the demographic problem, you will also know from Torah that there is no such thing as a demographic problem. Moshe Rabbeinu says, Lo ne'iru b'chem mikol ha'amim choshak Hashem b'chem. God desired you as a people not because you're the largest of all people on the face of this earth. Ki atem ha'ma'at mikol ha'amim. You are the smallest of all nations. We were the smallest in the days of Moshe, and we're the smallest now. And despite that, the Rebbeinu chose us. It's not possible. Not possible to be a Fumiyi today without living with a leap of faith. It's all going to make sense. We can't fight without the United States. And yet, sitting at this wedding, and I said, they're aggravating the Kishkas out of me. I come to a wedding, and all I want to do is enjoy myself. And so here is this great right winger who finally says, I see the demographic problem. I said, thank God David Ben-Gurion didn't see the demographic problem. Where would we be now? And then there's another, you know, that's one of the problems we Jews have. Everybody's a general, everybody's a president, everybody's a prime minister. And some guy says, don't you understand? We can't do anything against Bush. How are we going to get spare parts for our airplanes? Boy, this is already the greatest, understand. This guy at the wedding in the middle of Odi Shama is worried about the spare parts for our airplanes. So what are you going to do? You know, you have to. That's why Avas Yisroel is such a difficult mitzvah. It's a very difficult mitzvah. They're stupid sometimes. They're stupid. Medina Yisroel came into existence by a leap of faith. Atem ha'ma'at mikol ha'amim, the Rebbeinu Shem says. And what he said then is true today. Atem ha'ma'at mikol ha'amim. That's the way it is. That's the way the Hashgacha wanted it. Ask me why, I don't know why. The Rebbeinu Shem, Rabbi Yehuda Halevi says, the Rebbeinu Shem could have chosen any country in the world. He chose the smallest country in the world for the smallest people in the world and the greatest amount of Hashras Hashina, the Divine Presence, right here. That's where it is, right here. We've gone through two pillars upon which our Hashkafat HaYahadut has to be based. The first is Keitz HaMegula, the second is Kibbutz Golios, in gathering the exiles. The third, and this also, people simply don't understand it, they just don't understand. Yes, we are, in fact, an independent people in our own land. We are an independent people. So you'll tell me, we're dependent on this, and we're dependent on that, and we're dependent on America, and we're dependent on this. So you have to understand, we're living in a world where everybody is dependent on everybody else. Bush is dependent on who knows how many countries in the world. The European market is dependent. Everybody is dependent. We're living in a globalization, an era of globalization. Everybody is dependent on everybody else. And by the way, the world is going to have to learn that we all better learn how to live together side by side, or we're going to be in terrible, terrible trouble. But we are an independent people. In certain sectors of the community, you understand, to talk about independence, that's a no-no. That's not frum. What are you talking about? Independence is not frum. So I'll tell you. I want to learn with you a Rashi in Yeshayahu. I wrote it down just to make sure. You know, the pasuk in Yecheskel I remember, but over here I just want you to hear the Rashi. It's chapter 11, pasuk 11 in Yeshayahu. The pasuk says the following: V'hoya b'yomahu, and will come to pass on that day. Yosif Hashem shenit yado, God is going to stretch out His hand for a second time. Liknot et sha'ar amo, to acquire and bring back the remnants of His people. He's going to bring them from Ashur and Mitzrayim and Patros and Cush and Elam and Shinar, Hamat, Ve'iyayam. From all over the world, God is going to bring Jews back for the second time. The Mefarshim are concerned, when is the second time? What would come to mind first? The first thing that would come to mind is Bayit Sheni. Bayit Sheni. That's the second time Jews came back to Eretz Yisrael. But the fact is, and I believe the Radak points this out, it can't really be talking about Bayit Sheni because Jews didn't come back from all over the world. There was no ingathering of the exiles in the period of Bayit Sheni. There weren't Jews coming here from all over the world. Jews came from Bavel. We pointed out who were the ones that came from Bavel? The lowest of the low. The drug pushers, the ganavim, the guys that had to get out of Bavel. They're the ones that came with Ezra and Nehemiah. And they built the second Beis HaMikdash. And as we said, the rest of the Babylonian community, great big Jewish community, remained forever on the fringes of history. The fringes. Great exiles can just remain on the fringes of history. We know nothing of what went on in Babylon for 600 years. It's a black hole, because it doesn't mean anything. But those 42,000, they came back, and they established the Second Commonwealth. That's right. The Rebbe was Mizaka. You know, I have to control myself. I'm going next week on a 9-day speaking tour of the United States to encourage people to come on Aliyah. So, of course, I'm going to have to tone down my rhetoric. I'm going to have to smile. I can't tell them I've come to this fringe community in order to invite you to come to Eretz Yisrael. But the fact is, Jews living in Eretz Yisrael, that's exactly how they looked at the Babylonian Jewish community. Even the Babylonian Jewish community, when it had great, great Talmidei Chachamim there, Reish Lakish is the one who says to Rava Baba Chana Daf Tes in Yuma, Elohim, I swear to God, Samnina Lechu Bavloi, we hate you Babylonians. The Lo Alitem B'mei Ezra, you didn't come up on Aliyah in the days of Ezra. That's 700 years after Ezra had returned, and Reish Lakish says, we hate you Babylonians. And the Gemara says that would Jews have come to Eretz Yisrael en masse in the days of Ezra, God would have made Nisim for them as he made for Jews when they came in the days of Yehoshua. What's Yeshayahu talking about when he says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to acquire the Jewish people for a second time? It can't mean Ezra and Nehemiah, because Jews didn't come from all over the world. So Rashi says it. Rashi says, for a second time, Kimoshe Kenaomi Mitzrayim, just as HaKadosh Baruch Hu acquired them from Egypt. Shahaita Geulatam Berura, their redemption was a clear redemption. Me'ein Shibud, without being enslaved to another people. And Rashi goes on to say, it can't mean Bayit Sheni, Abu Bayit Sheni, Einam and Aminyan, the whole period of the second Beit HaMikdash doesn't count. Because we didn't have independence. We were a vassal state of the Persian Empire. You know what Rashi is saying? You know what Yeshayahu is talking about? When he describes God stretching out his hand for a second time to bring Jews home? It could only be our period in history. We're the second time. We're the second time because Jews have come from all over the world. We're the second time because we have independence. Can anybody deny that it's clear Rashi is saying that's what Yeshayahu is telling us? We were brought here by the Ribbono Shel Olam, not by the Zionists, though you have to give them a lot of credit. The Ribbono Shel Olam wanted to establish a state, and you know what? He didn't have anybody to do it with because we didn't come. That's our terrible, terrible hate, for which we're going to have to do tshuva for many, many years to come. Non-religious Jews came, and they cleaned the swamps, and they started planting and plowing. They came. Their inspiration most certainly came from those who were here 100 years before, the Talmidim of the Baal Shem Tov and the Talmidim of the Vilna Gaon. I think they came in 1776, when the fringe society was beginning in the United States of America. You know, don't shoot till you see the whites of their eyes, you know, give me liberty or give me death. In 1776, Washington was at Valley Forge, and the Talmidei Hazor, the Talmidim of the Vilna Gaon, and the Talmidim of Baal Shem were coming to Eretz Yisrael. I have two more comments to say. One is, I'm not a betting man. I see that they're one of two possibilities. Lachameyev Ezer Mishana, I'll be standing before the bar of heavenly judgment, and there are one of two possibilities. One possibility is I didn't say Hallel on Yom HaAtzmaut. And I'm going to stand up before the bar of justice. Remember, there are two possibilities. One is I didn't say Hallel. One is I did say Hallel. If I didn't say Hallel, so there it is, I'm standing before God, and God pounds on the table and he says, "Bold, I gave you the greatest gift in 2,000 years to climb the cell. You couldn't say Hallel on Yom HaAtzmaut." What answer will I have? And then it's going to ring out from heaven, "Gold, go to hell." There's a second possibility. The second possibility is the Rebbeinu Shalom, I did say Hallel. And the Rebbeinu Shalom is going to stand up there and he's going to tell me, "Gold, you're crazy. You're crazy. You said Hallel. And you're even worse. You said it with a bracha on your matzvot. Who do you think you are?" I'm not afraid of that. I'll stand there proudly and tell the Rebbeinu Shalom, "I'm sorry, God. You gave us an unbelievable gift. That wasn't even enough to thank you. I said Hallel because I felt every fiber of my being that you were doing a great chesed for Klal Yisrael." There'll be a silence. And then the sentence, "Gold, go to heaven." I'm not taking chances. I don't want to stand up there and be accused you didn't say Hallel. You couldn't thank me for the great gift. You know what? Truth is, I don't even care if you say Hallel or not. I don't care. I don't care whether you say Bracha or not. But to feel on that day that this was a great outpouring of Chesed HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and you have to feel that. You have to feel it. You have to be happy on that day. That's what it's all about. I'll tell you something else. I will never, never ever forget that day. I'll be honest with you. I was 13 years old. I think it was about a week or two before my bar mitzvah. And I remember coming in that Friday. The State of Israel was finally established on a Friday. By the way, it was established on a Friday. It was really supposed to be established on Shabbos. But those chilainim, you understand, those chilainim were concerned about Chil Shabbos, so they moved up the announcement of the establishment of the state. That Friday night, at 12 midnight, I think it was Sir Arthur Cunningham, the British High Commissioner, and the last British troops were going to be leaving Eretz Yisrael. In other words, the Union Jack would be coming down at 12, and the Israeli flag would go up. They didn't do that. They were afraid of Chilul Shabbos. So therefore, the Chilonim, you understand, those Mechalei Shabbos, Eichlei Treifus, they went ahead and they made it earlier. It was done on Friday. I remember that Friday, there was a tremendous amount of tension in the Jewish community worldwide. Tremendous amount of tension. We weren't certain what was going to happen. It happened early enough in Eretz Yisrael that Friday that we already knew the news as we were going to Shul to Daven Mincha. And you know, you ever seen in the movies those big radios, you know, the big wooden radios with all of the dials? We were listening and we heard of the establishment of the state. I came into shul, it was Yeshiva Torah Das at 207 Wilson Street in Williamsburg. There must have been 500 people in shul, at least 100 of them with numbers on their arms. And just before Mincha, somebody came running into shul to say, President Truman just recognized the state of Israel. There wasn't a dry eye in the house. 500 people were crying with joy. I get choked up every time I think of that moment. I'll never, ever forget it. And anybody who comes to me with his Yom HaAtzmaut nonsense doesn't have a clue what Jewish history is all about. Doesn't have a clue that 500,000 Jews were still in Bergen-Belsen and in Auschwitz because there was no place for them to go in the world. Jews were in DP camps. You know what DP camps are? DP camps. Displaced person camps. 500,000 Jews were displaced persons. Do you know what happened in the middle 40s, 47, 48? The largest movement of population. Jews started walking out of the displaced persons camps, walking across Europe to get to the Mediterranean in the hope that they'll get onto some unseaworthy boat so that they can get to Eretz Israel. That's what Eretz Israel was. It wasn't 9 hours and 45 minutes from New York to Tel Aviv, and the movie's lousy to the bargain. It was a people who wanted to come home. And all these guys that give you, Yom HaAtzmaut. They never clue what went on. And then, Pashut, the Jews started rushing out of all of the Arab countries to come home. The only ones who are waiting for are the Americans. It's taken them a heck of a long time. Anybody's going to tell me that this is not one of the most significant days in Jewish history knows not of what he speaks. One of the things I'm going to tell American Jewry is, this is going to be the 56th Yom HaAtzmaut, right? 56? 56 is Nun Vav. Nun Vav is 56. And you know what I'm going to tell them? No! No! What do you want to do? You want to sit in America and have an Israel Day march to celebrate 100 years of Medinas Israel? No! What are you waiting for? You have the opportunity to come. You don't understand the significance of the meaning of it? Maybe one more story. I'm afraid that story go read that story, but this is one I came to a conference of rabbis. I came to a conference of rabbis straight from Eretz Yisrael in New Jersey. As I come in, the fellows in charge of the conference tell me there's some big Rosh Yeshiva. And he's talking about Yerushalayim. Get in there, show him, he's talking about Yerushalayim. I go running in and hear about 300 rabbis, and this great man is speaking about Yerushalayim, and he's pushing, crying. Yerushalayim is an almana, a widow without her children. I'm sitting there, I don't know what's hitting me. I want you to know, it was the greatest moment in my life. I controlled myself. I was ready to yell out, what are you crying your eyes out? Let the children go home to their mama, and it'll be Emma Bonham Smith when he's crying his eyes out. Why didn't I get all riled up? Because I had to speak the next day about Eretz Israel. I would have turned off 250 rabbis if I would have challenged this great Gavul who was speaking this. So then the Rebbeinu Shel Olam, I don't ask for these situations, they come to me. So then there's another big Gavul who ends a speech. I tell you, I'm reliving it now, B'chol Dor V'Dor. Chayev Adam, I relive it, and he ends that Gimomata, the famous Meine Chazal, Reb Yochanan said in the name of Reb Shimon ben Yochai, Gimomatonis Tovus, there are three great gifts that God gave to the Jewish people, V'chulam lo nitnu ela yidei Yisurim, and all of them were given through suffering, Torah, Eretz Yisrael, and Olam Haba. And then he ends his speech dramatically, B'schus HaTorah, we should be Yitz, we should be Zeicher to Eretz Yisrael and Olam Haba. I wanted to yell out, what are you talking about? B'schus HaTorah, you're going to be Zeicher to Eretz Yisrael. You know what they're saying? You know what they're saying? Can you imagine the following scene? Three great gifts God gave us, Torah, Eretz Yisrael, and Olam Haba. Can you imagine a former Yid saying, Rabbi Shalom, you know, you gave us a great gift, Torah. You know, no thank you. Don't trouble yourself, you know. Saying like Thomas, yes, I don't really want gifts. Keep your Torah if I did this to you. Or somebody will say, Olam Haba, Olam Haba is a good zach. Learning Torah is. But you know, you don't have to go out of your way. Give me Olam Haba. No. You just keep your Matana. But you know what they are saying? You gave us a Matana, Eretz Yisrael. No thank you, it's all right. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Chavashim gave a matana. You know what you're supposed to do for a matana? You're supposed to thank the Chavashim. You're supposed to take the matana. There will be Yisurim in acquiring it. Anything great is acquired only through Yisurim. The challenge that faces American Orthodoxy today is, are they going to pick themselves up and do what they're supposed to do? That's the great challenge. The great challenge for us right now is to make sure that, number one, on Monday, which is Yom HaZikaron, when that siren goes off, I tell you, the siren in memory of more than 20,000 young people who gave their lives for this country, I stand up and I think about parents who lost children. I think about friends of mine who fell in battle, an uncle who fell in battle. And by the time that minute is over, I'm a basket case. If you spend a quality minute thinking about it, it's worth more than all of these fellas that will tell you what bitter Torah. I think about it by Avrahman. I say kill him. They never think about it by Tillam. They never think about it by Avad Achman. And they have more than 1 minute of Bittul Torah a day. No, you have to be Koveya Azman. The 2 minutes for the Shoah, I always think about the fact the one country in the world, 5 million people are standing to remember the greatest tragedy that ever befell any people on the face of this earth. By the time the 2 minutes are up, you understand, I'm choked up. That's its purpose. That's what you should do. HaKoros HaTov. That's Monday. And Tuesday is a whole day of Rabbeinu Shel Olam Yidboninu Chasdei Hashem. It's a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah saseh according to the Sharei Tshuva L'Rabbeinu Yonah to be Nizbonin B'Chasdei Hashem. God help somebody who doesn't do that. That's what the day is for me. Yidbonu Chasdei Hashem. And Yehidatzon, I'll tell you, while you're praying for Klal Yisrael, you better pray that we get out of all the trouble that we got ourselves into here. We're in difficult, difficult times. But I don't know, my wife always reminds me that I always say that the rule in modern Jewish history is expect the unexpected. From someplace out there, I hope and pray that Rabbeinu Shel Olam is going to come. He brought us here so that we should live here. He brought us here that we should stay here. He brought us here that we should be able to cultivate and hold on to every last part of Eretz Yisrael.